Okidok. Okay. So I do have your first assignment. Make sure to pick them up at the end of the class. Okay. I'm not going to give you now. questions? Are there any questions? Does anybody have an answer to the Dijkstra problem? Who is Vidya? Okay. So you should have this up there. So you had an idea that the connection, the difference between Dijkstra's algorithm. So the question I had was, what's the difference between Dijkstra's algorithm? That, how many of you have heard of Dijkstra's algorithm?
I've heard of it, but we didn't cover it.
Okay. Large number actually did here. So Dijkstra's algorithm does something very, very, very close to uniform cost search. And it's like a celebrated algorithm in computer science, right? So what's the difference? The only difference, as Vidya was pointing out in her answer, is that in Dijkstra's algorithm, essentially, for each node, you maintain its current best. So here is your graph. Right? And it will maintain, for each node on the graph itself, it will maintain its current best G value. Okay? So if I'm starting from here, I could have come to this node, let's say, this way, 6 plus 5, 11 plus 4, 15, or I could have come here this way, 7. Now, I would find this two different times during the search. I'll find this path as well as this path. Right? In Dijkstra's case, what he does is he remembers just the current best path. Okay, so he only maintains the states, not the nodes anymore. The way our algorithm works is that you actually wind up having two nodes corresponding to this state. One which has this path and one which has this path. Do people see that? So when in the uniform cost search that I described in the last class, assume for a minute, just assume that these are all directed graph. This is all directed nodes. So in essence, for this, and then let's call them S0, S1, S2, S3, S4, S5. So what happens during your uniform cost search is there would be some node N15 which corresponds to S3, and some other node, N25, let's say, which also corresponds to S3. One of them will have the G value 15. Another of them will have the G value 7. Okay? So there are multiple nodes corresponding to the same state. Whereas in Dijkstra's algorithm, you don't differentiate between nodes and states. You essentially just have the state, and the vertex of the graph, you just keep track of the current best path to the vertex of the graph. Okay, that's the only difference. So having said this, the question is, which looks more efficient? Dijkstra's algorithm looks more efficient. So why are we regressing? As we go to four-level classes, why are we thinking of a dumber algorithm as against this? What can you say in support of this idea that we were looking at? Again, part of the way you learn is you keep combining it to stuff that you know, so that you sink or swim. The entire knowledge either sinks or swims. Okay.
Is Dijkstra actually keeping track of the path, though?
Yeah, he can keep track of the path. He actually can remember the for each state, he can have a little pointer saying the parent node, parent state. What's the problem? What can you, yes? Yes. What's the problem with space? What space does it take? In the worst case, what does he need? how much space does Dijkstra need? The entire graph. Okay, I can make uniform cost search become Dijkstra's algorithm by just having a closed list, in essence. Okay, see, remember we talked about how to handle graphs with cycles. These are in general graphs itself. Okay, and when you have a graph, you have multiple ways of coming to the same world state, right? And then instead of just open list, we can talk about having closed list too. And once you have the closed list, in simple breadth first search and depth first search, all you cared about is if the thing that you're about to expand is present on the closed list, don't expand it. That's all you did before. Now what you would do is, if the thing that you're about to expand is present on the closed list, check what is the G value of the thing that you hold in your hand, and check what's the G value of the thing on the closed list. Whichever is the lower one, keep that. And don't expand it. Do you understand what I'm saying? So this will actually wind up essentially doing Dijkstra algorithm in the uniform cost search. But it's still worth realizing that this has the advantage. If you don't have the closed list, uniform cost search is essentially doing linear space. It doesn't have to remember the entire graph. Right? That is something that's important. And this actually brings up the point that from the point of view of 310, in 310 you assume that the entire graph can be kept in memory. Okay? Here we went out of our way to make sure that you never hold the entire graph in memory. In fact, you actually only expand the part of the graph that is needed. This is important because our graphs can be infinitely large. We don't mind, even if the graphs are infinitely large, as long as there are finite paths to the goal node, we are fine. Okay? So that's very important to understand. During the class, actually, we normally show a graph in front of you so that you can see what the paths are. But your search algorithm never sees the entire graph. It only sees it piecemeal. It just basically takes a node, asks the third party guy, the child generator, can you tell me who the children are? Do you understand what I'm saying? It's very important to understand that difference, because what you see versus what the search algorithm sees, I mean, for small conceptual examples, you see the entire graph in front of you. But you should act as if you're really only seeing one node and its children at a time. Okay? Question? Okay. There was another question on the blog. Yes. No, you don't modify the edges. Edge weights are given. What you do modify is for each state, you're talking about the Dijkstra, right? Dijkstra remembers for each state what is the best path to that state from the root node. That you keep modifying. In fact, there is a very interesting property that all these algorithms wind up using, you know, and it's a property that's like so inbuilt for us that we don't think twice. Okay, the property says optimal substructure. What does the optimal substructure property say? If in fact on the optimal path from the root node to the goal node, a node N5 appears, a state N5 appears, if this is the optimal path from here to here, then this must be the optimal path from here to here. Do you understand what I'm saying? So if the optimal way of going from here to Los Angeles will take me through Blythe, then the path, the segment of the path to Los Angeles that takes me through Blythe is in fact the optimal path for Blythe. This is not always true. This is not always true, but this is an optimal substructure property that all these algorithms use, because of which they don't have to remember all the different ways you came to this node. You only need to remember the best way you have to come to this node. okay? And this is also connected to another idea called Markovness, in the sense that all you care about is not the way you got to the state, but the state itself. Now that you have reached the state, what happens from the state onward depends only on the state, not how you got there. Yes? No, there is an optimal path given. So if there is no path whatsoever, then the optimal path is infinitely long. So the optimal path doesn't exist at all. If the path doesn't exist, this holds sort of trivially. But if the path, if the optimal path does exist, it is interesting to know that the subparts of the optimal path are also optimal. This is something that we are using. Think in the background about all sorts of scenarios where optimal substructure doesn't hold. You know lots and lots of them. Okay. Any ideas on the other question, which is this guy essentially had a graph of distances, and he was looking at integral distances. So if it is like 5.37 miles, he was just taking 5. Okay, and then he did an IDA star search on that. He got the optimal thing. But then he decided that he needs to be more accurate. So he spent a lot more time computing the distances exactly. So it would be 5.378597, 6.478598. It's more accurate distances now. The graph size is the same, right? The graph size is the same. The number of nodes are the same. The distances are more accurate now. And suddenly he found that his IDSR algorithm was taking way longer. The question is, does it make sense?
Maybe you rounded up on the critical
point. No, look for something that just IDSR has. Yes. How many of you understood what he just said? Okay, so the idea is in IDA star, the iterative deepening uniform cost search, right? Every iteration you wind up expanding, so you have a graph. So you have non-uniform cuts through the graph. So it's not one depth at a time. Okay, so it could be basically the worst possible scenario for iterative deepening in this case is each iteration brings in exactly one node, If that happens, then you are taking b power d nodes, and you're taking the first node, first and second, first, second, third, first, second, third, fourth, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and that's a really, really bad way to do search. Okay? And what you wound up doing when you actually accurately measured the distances is you made sure that everybody is unique. I mean, you increase the chance that every node is going to have a unique G value. And if every node is going to have a unique G value, then whenever you expand the iteration, you will probably just get one node in. It's a cute example to keep in mind as to how iterative deepening searches can be very bad when you start deepening them not using depth but using some other number such as G value. Okay? And in a minute, in fact, today we will see an algorithm called IDA star, which is exactly IDD. So we had the following things: IDDFS, which is iterative deepening depth first search, then IDDUC, I just made up this name, it's essentially iterative deepening uniform cost search, where the iterations are in G values. And so this, the iterations are set in DN, this, the iterations are set in GN, and this, the iterations would be set in FN. And an iterative deepening A star search can also be a really bad idea when the heuristics and the G values are such that each node winds up having a unique different F value. Okay?
So would the solution be to just increase that number and
Yeah, but when you do that, you are not going to get optimal anymore.
Right, you're losing the click. You can still find the optimal solution by checking the values.
So actually, since you got there, right, the situation that I described for our guy, it's once he completely accurately computed the edge cost, IDDUC will take forever, and he has nothing, no way of doing anything else, basically, because once you figured out what the optimal distances are, what the accurate distances are, you're not going to just ignore the accurate distances just so that you can be done faster. Okay? However, when we come to IDA star, the interesting thing about IDA star is we will be looking in terms of f of n, which is g of n plus h of n. And you will notice that in many cases, maybe g of n is quantized. That means it will be like 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. H of n can be quantized, can be more accurate, but it's just an estimate. So you might wind up considering estimates that are less accurate, just so that IDA star works faster. But then you will still get optimum distance in that case. Okay, we'll talk about that again in case there is questions on that. Okay. So do pay attention to the things that come on the blogs, partly because you can do more interesting things that, you know, I can't do everything in the class. And so if you discuss that, you know, we could actually get more interesting ideas that through. And the second thing is, you never know, I might actually just use them for the exam questions. So that would be fine too. Okay. So last class we were looking at uniform cost search, right? And then we looked at this graph, and then we basically noticed that in this kind of a scenario, you could essentially have a very long path here. Furthermore, in fact, for each of these nodes, there can be a huge big subgraph that's connected to that node. And you will be looking at all of them until you come here, and then you realize that you are actually far away from the goal, and then you shift over to the right path. So the question was there a way in which you can do better in terms of making the priorities be on a different number instead of G value, some other value, such that you would have seen N2 is better. And the idea that we talked about is that we are only considering in uniform cost search the G value, which is the cost up to reaching that state, which is important, but that's not the only aspect that's important. The other aspect is how far do you need to go from that state to reach the closest goal state. Okay, and we don't have anything in our mixture. You know, the G of n only captures how far did you travel, and H of n captures how far you need to travel. So we consider talking about a different extra estimate called H of n, which is an estimate on how far you are likely to have to travel. And we talked about the point that that's extra information. In fact, if you want to get the exact amount of distance you need to travel, you would have to do search under this node, which makes no sense, right? You're trying to improve search by doing search, okay? However, it turns out that there is a nice little sweet spot here, such that if I can get the estimates faster without actually computing the exact distance, and if the estimate has the following property, that if H star of n is the exact distance, exact optimal distance from that node to the goal node. Okay, this is hard to get. If anybody gives it to you, if in fact H star of n is polynomially computable, that means you shouldn't have been doing search for this problem to begin with. It was a tractable problem. Do you understand? In fact, everything, so search, by the way, is called a weak method. What a weak method means is it works for any problem. You can do search, you can do sorting using search. And the important thing to realize in doing sorting using search is H star is actually polynomially computable. Otherwise, you would be doing sorting in exponential time, which makes no sense. Okay? So the question is, but there are some problems where you cannot actually compute H star in polynomial time. Most problems of interest for us, you cannot compute H star in polynomial time. And yet we might compute an approximate into H star, which can be used in this F value, F equal to G plus H. And then you would be prioritizing your Q in terms of the F values, not in terms of the G values, but in terms of the F values. Now the question, of course, is what must this H value be? What property must this H value have such that if you prioritize the Q in terms of F value, which is G plus H, and don't change anything else in the algorithm, you will still be guaranteed to end with an optimal solution. Remember, the way optimality must be guaranteed is when you expand a node to, when you pick a node to expand from the front of the queue, prioritized queue, if it is a goal node, you say, yay, I'm done. That's it. And it better be the case that there's a theory behind your yay that you are actually optimal. Because nobody is going to say, when you say I'm optimal, I'm not going to sit down and check whether you're optimal or not. It makes no sense. Because if it's a large graph, to call your bluff, I would have to actually look at all possible paths and convince myself that yours is the optimal path, which is too painful. So you need to give me that guarantee up front. Yes?
I had a thought, since the H is getting F, the less than equal to H star, if you find a node that's one step away from the goal node, say, or the deciding puzzle, if you come up with a heuristic of anything greater than one, then you're going to miss it.
That's one way, but another way of thinking about it is, how do you approximate H star directly? You don't know what H star is, but try to think of two ways of approximating H star. Okay? So first of all, to understand, to keep this in mind, think of these kinds of pictures. These are the node, N. Okay? And here is the H of the node. And heuristic of a node is a real function. Okay, it sort of goes like this. That, let's say, is H star. Now, why did I have to make sure that it hits? I mean, this is supposed to just... In that place, it's hitting the x-axis. What does that mean? That's a solution. You are awake. Okay, that's the solution. That's one solution. H star can actually hit the... x-axis multiple places. Each place it hits, that's the solution. Right? Because if you are at a goal node, what's the shortest path from a goal state to goal state? Zero. Okay? By the way, another thing to remember is there may be multiple goal states, right? H of n computes the shortest path from u to the closest goal state. You understand what I'm saying? So suppose, you know, there are these children's games where you touch something, you become safe. And people are running around and somebody is throwing balls and there are safe places, okay? There are like 15 safe places in this place, okay? And there's one safe place there, one there, one here. If I'm here, what I'm asking is, heuristic value is, what is the shortest distance to the closest safe place? This one is my closest. And my estimate on this distance is what H is trying to compute, not the rest. Okay? And depending on where you are starting from, it may well be that one of these safe places is the optimal goal for you. But for any node during the search, you're looking for the closest goal node. That's what H is trying to compute. And having said that, this is H star N. Now H of N is some approximation to this H star of N. So here is one H. That's one H. And here is another H. This is H1. Here is another H. I'm sorry. Yeah, why not? That's another H, H2. Okay, those are two approximations. In the interesting thing is, this is a lower bound approximation for H star, right? And this is an upper bound. And then I can have an H3, which is neither lower nor upper, which is that's H3. Okay, that's no, neither lower nor upper, right? So the question then is, which of these are going to be guaranteeing optimality? And the argument is, if you are a lower bound everywhere, if you are guaranteed to be less than or equal to H star of n everywhere, then if you use G plus H as the F value and prioritize the Q, then you are guaranteed to find the optimal solution. And even if you don't know the full proof, which we'll be seeing in a minute, you know one way of remembering it. This is a special H, H0. X-axis is a special H value, H0, which is 0 for every node. If you put H equal to 0 everywhere, you get uniform cost search, which just prioritizes the goals and prioritizes the nodes in terms of G value. And that's already optimal.
Couldn't you get optimality though just by doing like a multi-pass search?
What is, no, I don't want to change my algorithm. Remember that there are different things you could do, but I'm going to keep my algorithm the same. All it does is, instead of prioritizing using G value, now I want to prioritize using F value. Okay, that's H value. And as long as H is for all nodes, H is less than or equal to H star for every node, then if that is the case, then it's a lower bound, and it's called, then you say a heuristic is admissible. So admissibility is a for all property. So the easiest way to prove admissibility is by counterexample. If you want to show something is not an admissible thing, all you need to give me is one example of one node where it's actually not less than H star. To actually prove it is admissible, you need to prove a for all property. So you need a mathematical induction or some nice proof like that. Okay? If it's a small graph, you can prove by just looking at all the nodes in the graph. Okay? Any questions on this? Now, here is the interesting thing. From the point of view of efficiency of search, that means doing the fewest number of expansions, should you be, so forget about, suppose I don't care about, let's see, where is H star, what's this like? I'll put H star in red. Okay. If I don't care about optimality, I just want to get done fast. Just get done fast. What would you say would be the H value in that case? I have no interest in optimality, maybe not even any interest in completeness. I just want to get done fast.
Higher than H star?
How high?
Infinity.
That's the way to remember, okay? If you want to get done, you want bigger H values. If you want optimality, you must be below H star. So if you want to have optimality and get done, you want to come as close to H star without crossing it. So that's your theory of H star search. That's it. Find heuristic values that come as close to H star without crossing it. Now, of course, the problem is trying to get close to H star are equal to H star, you would require the computation cost of heuristic would be as high as the search itself. Okay? So, let's look at, since we did enough of this in abstract, let's actually look at a concrete example in a minute. But this is A star search, okay? So the evaluation function is F of n equal to G of n plus H of n. G of n is the cost to reach the node up to now. And you do this by changing the pointers, okay? H of n is the estimated cost to the closest goal from the current node, okay? So g of n, you know, the search algorithm knows already what was the cost you spent to get here. H of n is outside of the search algorithm. It's a function. Just like a child generator function, there is a heuristic function. And it takes a node and gives a number back. That's an external function. Yes, sir? What? Yes, that's the interesting thing. So I want you to have two things in your mind today. One, if you are really interested in getting H star, it's a pretty painful thing. Two, if you want approximation to H star, they are very easy to get. Okay? So it is, in fact, what you are asking in H is a big thing. This is why it's called informed search. You are asking more about the problem. But as we pointed out last class, even if, in fact, there are, so for example, if there are multiple safe spots here, right, and I'm trying to figure out an estimate to the closest safe spot, right, I can take straight line distance for all the safe spots, take the lowest of those straight line distances. That is guaranteed to be a lower bound on the shortest path to the closest safe node. Do you understand what I'm saying? Last class we had an example where there was, I just wanted to reach that guy. Okay? So there were, of course, like obstacles. I can't just walk through the tables. But if I take the straight line path to him, that's guaranteed to be less than or equal to the true path to him. Now I have multiple guys. I can either reach him or reach him or reach him or reach his table. Okay? So four things, let's say. So I can compute four straight line distances. How hard is it? Take the square root of, you know, coordinates, the Euclidean distance. Take whichever is the smallest number. That's your admissible estimate. It's guaranteed to be admissible because it's going to be less than or equal to the true cost. So even if I'm standing here, maybe there was something around, so I can't reach it as easily. But as long as there is no path which is better than my estimate, I'm okay. And whenever in doubt, remember that you can always assume that all estimates are zero and be optimal, because that's what uniform cost search does. Yes?
So for example, the sliding puzzle, if you redefine it so that there were, say, two or three possible solutions, you would need to compute, and you had a heuristic that worked for one, then you could just take the minimum of all three.
Exactly. Okay? Now, as long as I have this picture, suppose I have an H1 here, okay, in black, and I have an H2 in green. Which would I rather use? H2. It's closer to H star. Agreed? Okay? So then I would say H2 is more informed than H1. So given two admissible heuristics, and H1 and H2, if you can show that for all n, H2 of n is greater than or equal to H1 of n, and they are both admissible, then H2 is more informed than H1. And you can actually argue and you can show that a more informed heuristic does fewer node expansions than a less informed heuristic. The more informed heuristic does fewer node expansions than less informed heuristic. Yes, sir?
Which one is H2?
This green one is H2. This black one is H1. The red one is H star. By the way, did you notice that all my heuristics, both H1 and H2, were dipping at the same place H star was dipping? You cannot be admissible if you are not zero at the goal node. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because if you are not zero at the goal node, then I have a node where you are greater than the H star. So I have proved that you are not admissible. You can be approximation, but you must be zero at the goal node. Straight line distance, when I'm actually sitting here, my straight line distance from here to here is zero. So it is admissible still. Okay?
When you think about the, that's like a boundary condition, if you have a really good heuristic, but for some reason it
it's not admissible. Again, remember, all I am saying is in terms of optimality. If you want optimality, admissibility is a sufficient condition. That means when you are admissible, you are guaranteed to be optimal. Okay. Third point. Here is my H3. That's H3. Did you know what I did? I basically made this blue one. I don't know how many of you are colorblind. This blue one is actually following H2 for a while, then follows H1, then follows H2, then follows H1. The question is H3, if I have H2 and, so the question is, if I have H3 heuristic and H1 heuristic alone, I didn't have H2, okay? If I take the maximum of H1 and H3, I will get H2, right? If I take maximum, so what I'm saying is forget about the green one for a minute. If you just compare H3 and H1, it's hard to tell who is better. Sometimes H3 is just as good as H1, sometimes it's better than H1 in terms of the higher value. But what you can do is you can take the max of both. If I give you two admissible heuristics, H1 and H3, the max of H1 and H3 is also an admissible heuristic and it's going to be more informed. Every at every n, so it's like at every node I take the values to that node given by this function and this function take the max of that.
Okay.
So it's like it's basically the envelope of the two curves. Yes. No. Max would be H2.
No.
Ah. Okay. You're right. I'm sorry. yes. Yeah. You're right. Let
but
me make.
As long as they differ on at least one point.
Yeah. So. Yes, so when there are two heuristics such that one of them is not always above the other one, but sometimes heuristic 2 is above it, you know, heuristic 1, sometimes it's below, then if you just take the upper envelope, that would still be an admissible heuristic because the original two were admissible and it will be more informed. That's the point I wanted to make. I'm sorry for this. I'll give you a better picture later.
So if you have heuristics that have different values, you can improve your heuristic by just taking the max.
Exactly. So if you have two ways of estimating, both of them are admissible, right? You can always take the max of both and you will still be admissible.
So you get better performance using both the heuristics in the project and taking the max of the
Yeah, unless of course one of the heuristics is always bigger than the other anyway, in which case you're just wasting time, right? So you have to have a scenario where the two estimates are done using different ideas, okay? So that they will, basically, there is no easy way of saying one is always bigger than the other, but they're both admissible. So in that case, if you take the max, you would do better. But at the cost of actually now computing two heuristics instead of just one. Okay? Let's look at some examples now. Okay. Here is my picture again, right? This is my old graph. And remember the edge cost, 0.1, 0.1, 0.1, 25.9. I gave you the heuristic function now. This is a heuristic function. Remember, for a small graph, a heuristic function is just h value for each state, right? Okay? So, my question is this heuristic admissible? Is this heuristic admissible? Why? Because 20 is how much? It's 0.1, 0.1, 25.
Oh,
it's like...
Right.
28 is too big. Because 28 essentially ensures... I'm sorry. 28 is because 25 plus 1... 25 plus 0.1, 25.1 is the optimal distance. You know, you should feel like God here because normally you don't get to do this. The entire graph is in front of you. So you are the god, and you are letting heuristics blunder their way, and you are saying, yeah, you are admissible, you are not. Okay, but at least you understand admissibility ideas here. So this guy is a loser because he actually overestimates. Now here's my question. So that's, keep this in mind when you go home, try to do search with that heuristic and see if you actually wind up getting optimal path or not. All we know is if you have inadmissible heuristic, you are not guaranteed an optimal path. There's no proof. Okay, one more now. Oh wait, what happened to mine? Oh, okay. Okay, now I have a new one. There's supposed to be a color there, but somehow it didn't went away. The new heuristic is 7 here, 8.8 here, 0 here, and 25 there. Remember that the heuristic would be on the nodes, not on the edges. First of all, do you realize that? Okay. Is this admissible or not admissible? It's admissible. Do people agree? Okay. Let's use this admissible heuristic and do search for a minute. So I'll start with N0, node 0, which is A, whose G value is 0. Okay? And the H value is 7. So its F value is 7. So you put this single node onto the queue, whose F value is 7. It really doesn't matter what its F value is because it's the only game in town, so you have to pick it up in the next iteration. Okay? So then you would get this node and this node, B and G. B, 0.1 G value. So the G value for that would be G value of A plus 0.1. So G of B is 0.1. And H of B is 8.8. So that would be its F value. So 8.9 is its F value. And for N2, 9 is the F value. You prioritize in terms of F values, so you pick which one? N1. Agreed? So I pick N1. So when I pick N1, let's think about a bit now. When I pick N1, let's see what happens to its G and H values. What's the G value of N1? G value of N3. It would be G value of N1 plus the distance to go from that to this node. So it would be 0.1 plus 0.1. So G of N3 is 0.1 plus 0.1 is 0.2. Okay? What about H of N3? Just read it. 0. So what is F of N3? 0.2. There's nothing wrong with it, you can do search, okay? But let's just take a minute and see, does it make sense for F value of N3 to be 0.2 when F value of N1, so F value of N3 is 0.2, is what you just found. Does it make sense for it to be 0.2 when F value of N1, as you know, is 8.9? Does that make sense? Does it make sense? To understand whether or not it makes sense, you have to have a picture of what is F telling you. F is an estimate, right? You know what G was telling you. G was the exact cost of the path from the root node to the current node. What is F value? F value is the estimate. F value is the estimate of what you think is the best path that goes from the root node to the goal node through this node. Do you understand? So F of N is the estimate, F of N is the estimate of the cost of the best path that goes from root node to the goal node. So F of N1 is the estimate of the best path that goes from root node through N1 to the goal node. F of N3 is the estimate of the best path that goes from the root node through N1 and N3, because N3 actually got in because of N1 through the goal node, to the goal node. So I constrained the path now. It's not only going through N1, it's also going to N3. How can a path that goes through both N1 and N3 be better than a path just goes through that just goes through N1? Do you understand what I'm saying? Just makes no sense. I'm not talking about G, I'm talking about F values. F is the cost of the entire path from the root node to the goal node, and we are taking an estimate of it. So in essence, when I had F of N1 equal to 8.9, I am saying any path that goes from the root node to the goal node will be at least 8.9 units costly. At least 8.9 units costly. That's what I just told you. N3 is just a child of N1. To get to N3, you must have gone through N1. How can it be suddenly better than its parent's F value? It makes no sense. Now, this is not possible if you only consider G values, because G values monotonically increase. H, the F values on the other hand, have the component H, which you just randomly put. As long as it just is less than H star, it's admissible. So what I wound up doing is, I put 8.8 here and 0 here. And that, because of that, the F value for this guy now suddenly is starting to look better than the F value for this guy. There is nothing wrong. You can leave it and do search. Basically, you would do unnecessarily extra expansion. You will still be guaranteed to be optimal, but you will do unnecessary extra expansions. Or you can be reasonable and say the F value of a node is maximum of F value of its parent and G value of that node plus H value of that node. If you do that, then essentially you have made sure that you can never be better than your parent in terms of F value. And it's a reasonable thing to do. Okay? This is called path max correction. This is called the path max correction. And so what I'm doing here essentially is F of B is 8.9. In fact, F of N1 is 8.9. F of N3 is 0.2. This doesn't make sense since we are actually going through N1 to get to N3. So it should at least be as bad as 8.9. So what I wind up doing is take the max of the F value of this node and its parent node.
And we're still only allowing positive costs.
We are always allowing positive costs.
I'm sorry, we're still disallowing negative costs.
Yes. Yeah. Now, by the way, in case you're wondering whether this makes sense, that's the triangle law of inequality. All we are ensuring is that since F is supposed to be some sort of a distance, right, it better satisfy triangle law of inequality. Okay? So essentially, if I have B, C, and G, right, the cost between C and B is the edge cost, B and C. And the estimate of distance from B to C is F of B. The estimate of distance from C to G is F of C. And the triangle law of inequality ensures that the sum of any two sides must be greater than or equal to the third side. Right? Otherwise, it's not a good distance. You can get by with distances which don't have triangle law of inequality, but they're not good distances. They don't have as good a properties. You, in fact, in this particular case, if you don't do path max correction, you will wind up doing more expansions. You will still be optimal, but you will wind up doing more expansion. And this happens only because we get to select H from any which way, and the only thing you're ensuring is everywhere H is less than H star, which this one is. Okay? And a heuristic which does not require path max correction, that means it'll never wind up being the case that the F value of that heuristic is actually F value of any node is actually less than the F value of its parent. Okay? Any heuristic which never requires path max is called a monotonic heuristic. And many reasonable heuristics are actually monotonic. In particular, if you take the straight line distance, it's a monotonic heuristic. So if you take whatever the g value is and add the straight line distance to get the f value, then you will never have to do this path max correction. You can put that, but it will never actually go through. You will always take the f value of the node, not the parent's node. Okay? That's the monotonic heuristic. Okay. Yes, sir.
And you can't mess that up just by making that 8.8 really large, because if you could, it would be inadmissible.
At some point of time, it will become inadmissible.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So there are like two tensions. In fact, the tension one is a global tension. Every node must be below H star. The tension two that we are talking about, which requires the path max correction, is a local tension. You can never be better than your parent. It's like depressing, but essentially what we are saying is, if you are saying all paths that go through your parent must be at least 8.8 units long, any path that goes through you, since it also must go through your parent, must also be at least 8.8 units. It can only be worse, not better. And one advantage of this is, if you do path max correction, then we'll see that, remember I showed you a picture earlier as to how the uniform cost search works on a graph, I mean on a map. I'll show that picture in a minute too. But it'll start from the start node and look at concentric circles of g values. Concentric circles of g values. Okay? A star can be seen as looking at concentric f values. They're not circles, but they're f values. And f value always monotonically increases because of this path max correction. Okay? So continuing here, I did do this path max correction, so it became 8.8 N3, okay? 8.8 still is lower than 9 in this case. So I would expand this, Okay, so it should be 8.9, you're right. This should have been 8.9. I'll change that, okay. So, and I'll expand, so this should have been 8.9, but it's still less than 9. And so you'll expand this and I get N4. Now N4 suddenly is 0.3 plus 25, which is 25.3, right? I should be in middle school. And 25.3, which thankfully is worse than 9, and so you would get that guy. The nice thing about A star search is, you will always be caught right before you pick the wrong guy and, you know, commit to them as the goal node. You'll be caught and made sure that you'll go to the right goal node. The better the heuristic, you would never come close to bad commitments to begin with. But as long as the heuristic is admissible, you will always get to the right optimal goal. Okay? Here is a new heuristic. What's interesting about this yellow heuristic? Who said it's not admissible? Is it not admissible?
It's H star.
It's H star. Admissibility is less than or equal to. It's not strictly less than. Otherwise, you would say H star is dead guy. You know. In fact, this is the admissible. It's not only admissible, it is in fact the correct distance. The exact perfect distance, right?
25.2, is that greater than?
Which one? Okay, this is 0.1, so this is 25.2. So what was, what? 25.1 and 0.1, 25.2. See, this is a goal node, okay? This is 25.2. Because once you go here, this is the only way you go. You don't go back. There is no go back possibility. This is 25.2, whereas this guy is still 9. If you do this heuristic, what happens? You start with N0, you would pick these two, this will be 25.3, this will be 9. So you right away expand N2 and you're done. So if you have perfect heuristic, you can show that the number of node expansions is equal to essentially order of the depth of the goal node. depth of the shortest goal, the closest goal node. So that's the number of expansions you wind up doing, right? Okay. Let's see. You want to do the proof now, or let's do that proof a little later. Basically, once you do path max expansion, path max correction, you can think of A star really, if uniform cost search is going in concentric circles in terms of the distance you have traveled, A star is traveling in these ellipsoids. Okay, the ellipsoids are kind of going more and more towards the goal node. And you will consider all the nodes here, all the nodes here, all the nodes here, etc. Now, if it is IDA star, it will consider just these, then these and these together, these together. If it is just A star, it will consider these nodes, those nodes, those nodes. These are the new F frontiers. Now, this, the F value of the optimal goal node is F star. Because it has no H value, it is zero, and whatever is the optimal cost would be its F value. Now the advantage of A star search is you can be sure that A star search never expands a node whose F value is greater than F star. Whose F value is greater than F star. So it will consider F value equal to 1, 5, 7, 9, whatever. And then the optimal, let's say, is 25. You'll never expand a node whose F value is greater than 25. And when I talked about informedness of heuristics, what we said essentially, in fact, it turns out that if a heuristic H2 is more informed than H1, then it would never expand more nodes in the interior F fringes. In the interior F fringes. On the fringe where F equal to F star, all bets are off. Because all of them are equally good looking for your H value. So you consider all of them, and when you pick the guy with H, you know, F equal to, which actually happens to the goal node, you stop. Do you understand that? Because there is no reason for no node in the world to have F equal to F star other than the goal node. And when you get to the F star iteration, right, depending on your heuristic, you could just have just the goal node and a couple of bad guys, or you could have everybody in the class saying, we are good. And then you wind up, everybody, these guys will not exist anymore. You would do all the work in the last level. This is important. Keep this in mind. When you do actual testing on your project one, you would notice that what you thought was a more informed heuristic winds up actually doing more total node expansion sometimes than the one which is less informed. And if you then differentiate between how many interior nodes each heuristic is expanding and how many F equal to F star nodes each heuristic is expanding, then you can be sure that the ones that it expands, which F less than F star, is guaranteed to be better for, for informed, more informed heuristics. Okay. So properties of heuristic A star search, is it complete? Yeah, it's complete for the same reasons uniform cost search is complete. Okay, H is still, you know, positive, and it's zero or above, and G is anyway positive and zero or above. And so if there is a finite path to the goal node, you would find it. Is it optimal? We talked about it all this while. How much time does it take? The time it takes somehow depends on the distance, the difference between H star and the H you are using. Okay, you know that the two extremes for A star search is H of n equal to 0, one side, and the other side, H of n equal to H star of n. In this case, the time, the number of expansions is b power d. In this case, the number of expansions is d. That's a pretty big spread. Okay, here you die many times over. Here you are very lucky. Of course, your life, you will be somewhere in between. The question is, how likely are you get to this? And the answer to that is not very optimistic. If you consider the distance between two heuristics, H1N and H2N, to be the maximum difference between H1N and H2N, absolute value of the maximum difference for overall N. Okay, so that is the maximum one heuristic is above the other heuristic. Okay, and assume both of them are admissible. Then, in essence, if you consider one of them to be H star, for any heuristic, what is the maximum distance of that heuristic from the admissible heuristic at any given point? Okay, it will be zero if H is equal to H star. It will be some number otherwise. Okay. The amount of search you do, this is, you can think of this as error, absolute error, or you can also think of this error divided by the actual H value, which would give you the relative error. And basically what you have is H star minus H by H star, which is the relative error. If you consider the relative error of a heuristic with respect to the perfect heuristic, the number of nodes it expands would be exponential in the relative error. Because then essentially it will be exponential in a constant, which is essentially, you know, the idea is the number of nodes being expanded is relative error in H times the length of solution exponential in this. Now this will be 1 times length of the solution would be D. Okay. And in fact this will be 0. This will be 0 times D, exponent of 0. So it's this aspect, this part would essentially become 1 for H star. Okay? And you can think of, so the constant term that is missing from there essentially winds up being the number of nodes you expanded to get to the goal node. Whereas in the other cases, any other case, there is a big exponent which is at least of the order of the relative error between the heuristic and H star. Optimality. Is A star optimal? We talked about it. I'm sorry. Space. Is A star space linear? When H equal to H star, A star space is linear. Agreed?
It's tied to the time.
Yeah, it's not just tied to the time. Actually, yeah, it is sort of tied to the time, but not very clearly. Okay. In the best case, it's linear. In most other cases, essentially, in the worst case, it's bet first. Okay? So if you want to ensure linear space, you do IDA star search.
If you ignore calculating the heuristics, I meant.
What?
I mean, if you ignore calculating the heuristics, then the space and the time will be tied by the fact that they're both dependent on the number of nodes.
Yeah, so we think of space as the size of the queue.
Yeah.
That's all we think of.
Yeah.
Okay? So IDA star, essentially, I would not have to go into it into too much detail because I already told you a version of IDA star where H equal to 0, which was iterative deepening uniform card search. Here you do it in terms of F value, which where H is not equal to 0. Okay? So all it will look like is depth first, iterative deepening depth first search would look like that, one depth at a time. On the other hand, IDA star would basically wind up having any random frontier. Okay? And the way the limit of the F value is increased is like the way we discussed last time. So you have a limit for F value, and as soon as when you're trying to put a node in, you would check whether or not its F value is less than the current limit of the F value. If not, you won't let it in. But before throwing it out, you remember who was the best node who just fell above the F value limit currently. And then when the next iteration comes, you take that node's F value and make it the limit.
But wouldn't that mean you only expand one node?
Yeah, no, because it could be, again, think of your bar bouncer scenario. Okay, so I was only allowing people who are 20 qubits good looking. Right now, okay, that's my requirement. And then I don't know who to show, but maybe I showed up. Okay, and I was 25 cubits good looking. I'm being extremely ambitious here, and they didn't let me in. But then so some of these other guys also showed up. They too were 25 cubits good looking. They too were not allowed in. And then some of these other guys showed up. They were 35 cubits good looking. They were losers. They were thrown out. But of the people who were not allowed in, there were these four of us who were 25 cubits. All of us would be allowed in the next iteration. So it has nothing to do with, it's a real question is, how is the F value distributed over the nodes? Yes, are all nodes having unique F values, or do they have like groups of F values? If you do a histogram of F values.
So if we go back to your example that someone wrote on the blog where they used floating point numbers for
yes.
instances,
yeah.
it's more likely, at least in that case, that you're only going to be bringing in.
Exactly, exactly. And now that we're talking about it, remember that example, I'll change the example now, okay? G value, so this guy was still doing the distance computation, right? And so they computed the distances in terms of integral miles, and there were integral miles, let's say. Suppose the world is made in such a way that all cities are integral miles away from each city, right? Now they started getting the H values. First they got a admissible H value, which was integral valued. Then they became slightly more ambitious, and they started getting more informed heuristic, okay, which essentially, think of it this way. So you take H, a given H, add to it a small random number between 0 and 0.007, okay, such that when you add this number to the heuristic, it will still be admissible. Now the new heuristic is theoretically more informed, right? Because at every place it's bigger than the old heuristic. But it's like really, really badly pushing away IDA star search, because these random numbers are going to be, you know, if I have enough precision on these, then each random number would be a different number, and then I would wind up having unique F values. Okay, so this is a place where it makes even more of a telling point that in trying to be more accurate with the heuristic, you actually might have worse than IDA star search. Okay, any questions? Okay. This is basically going to be the discussion next class, but let me start it over. Actually, let me start it over with a picture, because you can remember pictures easier. Okay. So here, I talked about getting admissible heuristics, right? The question is, where do heuristics come from? The point to remember is heuristics come from abstractions of the original problem. You take the problem, abstract it out by removing some of the constraints in the problem, solve it optimally in the abstract space. The distance in the abstract space would be a lower bound on the distance in the concrete space and the real space. So for example, if I'm trying to find the distance between me and that guy, and I have all these obstacles, one abstraction is magically all of you disappear. All the tables disappear. Okay, so basically at which point I have an abstract problem where that guy exists, I exist, nothing exists in between. What's the optimal path from me to him? Straight line distance. That is guaranteed to be a lower bound on the real distance. That's one abstraction. Now, should I consider that abstraction or consider a different kind of abstraction, which is for every obstacle in this room, okay, of course, these obstacles are funny looking, but let's say for every obstacle in this room, I don't mind, let's say, walking over the tables. You know, I can go through tables, but when I go through people, it starts hurting them, and I don't want to do that, right? So for each of the person here, I think of them as obstacles, and I want to avoid them. One idea I might have is to put a circle around each of them. It's still a plane, and all the obstacles are sort of circularly circumscribed. So obstacles all have the same shape, the circular shapes. And then I'm going to go from here to there. It's a new abstraction. Is it a better or worse abstraction than before? It's closer to reality because I'm actually admitting that there exist obstacles. Is it easier or harder to compute the optimal path in this abstraction corresponding to the previous one? Harder. But if I do compute it in this abstraction, I get a better estimate. Okay? In fact, an interesting thing that you can do is, once I take all these circles, right, if I take the largest, basically I can wind up shrinking, even if I have myself a reasonable amount of girth, right, then I am a circle too, and I'm a circle passing through circles. But I can shrink myself to a point size and make all these circles fatter looking. You know, if I am circle of radius r, I add to all of your circles radius r. That would still work. Okay? So, what? The question is the following. I said circles, right? So here are funny obstacles, g to I, right? If I ignore them, straight line distance. If I put circles, it'll be better abstraction than this. My question is, should I put circles inscribed or circumscribed?
Inscribed.
If you understand the answer to that, you understood a whole bunch today. Why not circumscribed? Circumscribed is what you would like to do, because that way you can get done faster. But if you circumscribe it, there may be some way of squeezing between obstacles that was possible. But because one side it's kind of going little less and the other one is going little more, and so you kind of can go through them. But when you put circles, the circles intersected and you think there is no path. Beautiful example. Whenever you get confused about it, you need to think about this. On the plane, if you're trying to approximate obstacles by circles, you should circumscribe or inscribe. If you inscribe, you get admissibility. If you circumscribe, you don't. Now, obviously, if an obstacle like this, if you inscribe, look at this. There is still so much of the obstacle left. You're missing them. I can make it better and better abstraction by, instead of circumscribing circles, I circumscribe polygons. Instead of inscribing circles, I inscribe polygons. Generalized polygon, such that the polygon is always inside the obstacle. Okay, so here is another abstraction. This abstraction, this is better than this, which is better than this, and this is the real world. If I find the optimal path here, you'll get H star. If I find the optimal path here, I'll get HP, HC, HD. HD is less informed than HC, HC is less informed than HP, HP is less informed than H star. And the problem is, you can increase the informedness, but at the cost of increasing the cost of computing the heuristic. If you consider different heuristics, the cost of H0, HD, HC, H star, the cost of those heuristics is increasing exponentially. But if you use those heuristics, the amount of time you spend doing the search is reducing exponentially. But it's you who is doing heuristic cost as well as expansion. So the total cost is the sum of those two curves. And $1 million question is, where does the minimum fall? Do you understand? Think about this. We'll come back and have discussion next class.